joy that from thy presence springs.
I'll just want to quickly interrupt right here to explain what's going on. A little while back, I recorded this show in front of about 18 people in the basement of my friend Andrea, Jane, and Aaron's house. And we went into this basement. Now, it's not what you'd call a basement in New Jersey or something, say. It's not like a basement you'd put, oh, I'm going to put a bar down there and a pool table and everything. No, this is more like something, if by basement you mean place to store potatoes or hide moonshine or maybe hide slaves, runaway slaves, like on an Underground Railroad or something. That'd be great. But it was just a kind of a half space. But they'd made it into what looked like a little bar or club for Homo floresiensis. And a giant went down there with a bunch of other people, and there was chairs. You had to sit, really. Standing was, no, you could stand. It was about a 6.5-foot ceiling, I would say. And recorded this show. And it was very exciting because some of those friends were shape note singers. They just happened to be shape note singers. And they said, hey, do you want us to perform Balls Town, your theme? And I said, of course.
To spend one day with the honor, it's
days on earth.
To spend one day with the honor.
Spend one day with the honor
to see the days and days of mercy.
To spend one day with the honor
exceeds a thousand days of mercy.
Oh, that was wonderful. Yay. That was so wonderful. That was exactly like 1,000 days of mirth to me. Now, you may not know this, but the show this week is coming from a basement in Louisville, Kentucky. But that's not really where we are. We are in Pompeii. A basement in Pompeii. The year is 79. The Bee Gees album Saturday Night Fever has just garnered most of the Grammy nominations at V. And the date is August. There's nobody knows Latin. I'm confusing the two eras. The date is August 24th. This is the height of the corporate meeting season, because Pompeii, what they used to call it, is the Boca Raton, Florida of ancient Rome. And it was a seaside city, and people would bring their corporate retreats there. And that's what you are at. We are at a corporate retreat in Pompeii in 79. And I am here to tell you about a new type of garum. Now, what is garum, you ask? It is only the most popular sauce in the ancient world. Everybody loves garum. Not ketchup, raw sauce, garum. It is the stuff. It is a fish sauce, and here's how you make it. If you'd like to make your own, you take some fish heads and some fish guts, and you kind of mash them up, I guess, with a mortar and pestle. And then you take that, and you sit it in the sun for a couple days and let it ferment. There you go. You got some garum. Some people like to maybe sprinkle. In Cincinnati, they put a little cinnamon in it, I think. Which is repulsive, and in a fish sauce that otherwise makes you vomit, you'd figure, how could you make that worse? Well, why are you telling me about fish sauces? What do I need to do as coming here to Pompeii? Why are you mentioning garum? Everybody knows about that, because I want you to think about it in a different way. We have some new garum flavors. They're international flavors, and I want to introduce you to country cheddar garum. Now, what are you talking about? We weren't really in Pompeii, and I don't want to scare you, because a lot of people are impressionable. And if I start talking about that too much, you might think that you have been transported to that time. Why even mention it? Because I was at a museum one time, and I don't know if you've ever seen these, but there are bodies that are preserved from Pompeii, because some of them were sitting in a basement, just like we are, when a volcano erupted. Can you believe that? They didn't know that was going to happen. They thought they were just going to buy a couple of cases of fish sauce and take it back to their city and try to sell it. But in reality, they were all had the same fate, all these people in this room, and they were about to become sort of George Segal sculptures. You say, George Segal, the comedian? No, the artist, not the comedian. You're probably thinking, well, doesn't he play banjo or something? I think you're thinking of Jerry Van Dyke. I don't want to be a sculpture, Hardy. I don't want to be one of these quasi-ashen mummies from Pompeii. No, I realize that. But when we ever get in a situation like this where we're strangers or acquaintances and we're all together, our fates are now intertwined and no one knows what's going to happen exactly. I call this the Poseidon adventure factor. See, because this room could be anywhere, and we're fine, and we're all sitting around, and we'll leave the room, and we won't remember the event too clearly. Oh, I'll remember it. No, you won't. But if this room flipped over, and suddenly the basement was the attic, and we had to get out of here and swim underwater or something like that, then we would remember it well. Are you prepared to be one of those people on Poseidon Adventure? Are you going to swim underwater for us? You take off those beads that your husband gave you that you don't want to lose, and you swim up to the dining room and rescue us all, because wherever we are, we might be one of those people. When I saw that Pompeii exhibit and I saw those people locked in those poses, I started to become very self-conscious and think, well, how would I want to pose if there was hot ash dumped on me? I'm not exactly sure whether I'd want to be doing something kind of natural or whether I'd go full abject fear, let people in the future know, or who can... turns out volcanoes are a thing. Now, I was also told they didn't have any real word for volcano, that they didn't, when people were yelling, you know, run from the volcano, a lot of people didn't know what that meant. But they didn't realize that it was going to happen. So if you don't know it's going to happen, then it happens, you have no context for it. That's why whenever I'm in a group like this, I always think, like, you know, who's cowboy? Who's Blackie? Because it's like those old movies. We all could be some kind of character that is required for a situation that normally we go about our lives and we think, well, maybe I'm not important or something like that. But once you get stuck in, let's say a bus and they can't get the doors open, you think, well, I live here now with these people. Or an airplane. Have you ever been stuck on the tarmac? And you're thinking, this is my new family. We will live here. And maybe they can put, you know, food through a little opening or something like that. And these are now my people. And they might need the skill that I have, which is absolutely none. I was on a plane not long ago, and the lady behind me had an incident. She had a spell. My Aunt Alice used to have spells. She was diabetic. But I don't know about the lady behind me. She just got real ashen and everything. So what they did is they had... she was in luck because she's surrounded by like 12 doctors. And so one doctor was sitting next to her, and they brought the oxygen, and the doctor put it on her and took her pulse. And another doctor came up from the aisle, and I could see he felt, he was like, I thought I was going to be the doctor. And then another doctor came up, and he was also looking like, why don't I get to be the doctor? Why wasn't there, maybe there should have been some discussion about who treated her. We didn't get together and compare notes first. Now, what am I? I'm just like an extra doctor. And I realized, though, that my job, my role on that airplane was to be very, very quiet and remember those things so that I could go talk about them. And I looked at that doctor and I said, you know, you have to stay alert and everything. And I can be drunk or high and I'm fine. I can still do my thing. And I felt a little bit superior to the doctor, although I could not have saved the lady's life. But she was a very old lady, and I could have talked her in to the transition. If she was going to pass, I know that I could have been there. It's all right. Go to the light. You're going to be okay. So we don't always need to heal, or we don't always need to be the hero, right? But we do need to be present. And there is no wrong way to live our lives, right? There's no wrong way to be, so it doesn't matter. We all are here. We could all, have you gone through the head and figured out what your skill is yet? If we all get stuck here, if it's like Avenging Angel and we can't, Avenging, it's an exterminating angel. What's the movie? Exterminate. Please speak up so people know there's a crowd. They're both the exterminating angel, the Buñuel one where they can't leave. They go to a party. Exterminating angel, and then they can't leave, and so they just camp there and they start making fire out of the things. And I'm going through that in my head now. Like, where are we going to get water? Probably from the sink, right? But I mean, these are things to think about. Somebody's got to be in charge, and then who's going to be the leader? Because all societies need leaders, don't they? Don't we need some kind of authority figure to lead us into hell?
No,
absolutely not. I think there's enough of us. This is actually a perfect group because I think we can do without a leader. Anti-authoritarian groups tend to work well when they're small. So we can all get together and embarrass people or chide them or whatever we need to do to get them to do the work. I would like to mention now that if it does come up, I'm not a super hard worker. And I'm going to be honest with you, it really is not. It's not a physical thing. It's a Bartleby thing, you know, prefer not to, really. But I think you need to take that into consideration. We would never condemn somebody for mental illness, for depression, for laziness, or for lack of character, right? Those are not choices, necessarily. I mean, if I feel like philosophically that I don't believe really necessarily in free will, I don't know that you can impose that on me, really. I do feel badly about some things, but I also realize God made me the way I am. So really, that's who you need to speak to. I'm just winding down here. I'm just doing my nature, and my nature is just to be what? I'm not sure, and it isn't really very well defined until you find yourself in opposition of other people. Then you find that all of a sudden you have a role. If I was stuck alone in this basement, oh, the things I would do. First of all, it wouldn't even be an issue for months. To be honest, that'd be fine. Nobody messing with me, as long as I didn't, you know, break my glasses or something, reading all my precious books, I'd be fine. Then at some point, I would be like, well, I'm out of chickpeas or something. I'm out of lentils. I'm going to have to forge out. And notice it wasn't company. But that would eventually happen too. I wish I had someone to eat my lentils with. But if I was alone, it would not be a priority necessarily to get out. If we were all together, I know one of you would ruin it by having some sort of appointment. But if it was the end of the world, maybe we could convince you that it wasn't that important. I think you can blow off that class because, first of all, everyone's dead. So no one's going to even be able, your grades are not going to get, submitted or whatever. So just stay here, be wherever you are. Every time I get on an elevator, I have this Poseidon adventure feeling where we're all going to get stuck. And suddenly these people who are strangers are going to be intimates, or worse than that, are going to be the people that I am in a Pompeii basement with, and I've got to look at them. And they're the last people I have to look at. I think a lot about the submarine, the Hunley. The submarine Hunley went down during the Civil War, and it was a Confederate submarine, and they decided, let's make a submarine. And they went, well, what's that? I don't know. So that was the first problem. And they got a big, tank thing, right? I don't even know what they kept in it during the Civil War, but I found a big metal thing, one of them said. And they go, all right, let's all get in it, and we'll make a crank and a propeller. And we're going to go out to one of the Union boats and put a bomb on it. So they got in their metal coffin, and they cranked themselves to the bottom of the ocean, where they then sat and just kind of looked at each other and went, oh, whoops. And I think there may be 8 guys or something. And they were sitting on benches, sort of facing each other with the crank in the middle. And then they just sunk. And I don't know, we don't know what went through there, because we've lost the flight recorder. It was never found. It was one of them going, oh, slow down, y'all, slow down. Now scream slower. And you wonder what their reactions were, because that's a heck of a predicament to be in, right? You know, this is it. We are sitting in a tank. This is spacious. It was much smaller than this. It was like those two rows right there, and you're facing each other. And what do you do? What is the last thing you say? And how is that life different from the life you get up and you go to every day anyway? Like, how long does your life need to be for you to live it? How short does it need to be? What would you do in those last minutes? Do you just adjust what you're thinking? I mean, what do you do? Do you suddenly go out the window? All this stuff, oh man, I was going through the plans for my new barn in the head, and I'm still doing it, knowing I'm not going to get back there and build that barn. So what would you think about if you had to really just start from right now thinking? Right now is your last moment. What do you do? Would you even care to ask questions to other people? So tell me about yourself. Boy, how fast or slowly would time move? It depends. If you were scared, you'd want it to go fast, right? Get this over with. But what if you wanted to savor these last terrifying, nightmarish moments with fellas, these smelly guys you don't even really like? You know, what would you do? What if these were our last moments? I wonder that all the time. And I know I'm not supposed to wonder that when I'm in restaurants or religious services. Speaking of which, this is terrifyingly like being invited to somebody's really bizarre church. Isn't it? It's yeah. Like, oh, will you go to church with me? Sure. What harm could that be? And then it's like in a storefront or someone's house, and you go, oh, no, what have I done? Because there's no sitting in the back, right? That's not far enough back. I completely notice you. You cannot, and you can't even sneak out. You're going to literally have to be the last one to leave. So you're trapped in this wonderful, scary church service, and you don't know what's going to happen. I could really start, the snakes could come out, and then you would be stuck, or I start saying really outrageous, crazy things, and we go, it's your turn to stand up and scream now. And you go, I don't know, I'm new, I'm just visiting. I don't know if I want to be part of a religion. You know, one of us now. And what if we were one of you? You ever move to a neighborhood, and you maybe get a little flyer in your mailbox and says, we appreciate you come to our church, and you feel slightly threatened a little bit because your neighbors are telling you how to fit in, and you go, oh, that's not an option. I can't do it. And yet we really like you to be part of us. We'd really like you to fit into the community. Oh, I just think I'm going to be alone in the basement. Just let me know when y'all perish in a nuclear holocaust, and I'll come out and I'll feed your dog for you. But for right now, I'm going to go hide because I don't know how much I need other people. I don't know what the rule is. I don't know if I need others. I know if I wanted to self-preserve, I would have to have others, right? I would need other people to help me get out of these situations, help me get out of the elevator. But personally, I could live in an elevator for the rest of my life. I know this because I've watched enough movies. If I felt at all claustrophobic, I would simply... You just push this panel out of the way. Does this one come out of the way? It doesn't. And you crawl up, and then you shimmy. You either shimmy up the cable, or I think you can get, if you can get around, you can shimmy down it. Go, pry the doors open, go out, and then you're in the department store at night by yourself. You can get anything you want, and then you go up and live in the ceiling. And that's a fantasy I had when I was a child. I live in the ceiling at Macy's or something. And then every night I go down like a rat and I collect the things I want. And then I bring them up to my cozy little place and I sleep during the day. And then I get up at night again and I raid the Cuisinart section or something like that. I have too many appliances up here, but oh my gosh, it's so wonderful to live over a Macy's. I wish I could live over everything I need. I like dreams of acquisition. Do you have them? Where you walk, you're dreaming, but you walk in your room and you go, I've never seen so many desirable antiques. Oh, this is an amazing place. Or something else you want, something crazy. Oh, this is like a guitar warehouse or something. I can take anything. I didn't know this room existed in my house. I have 12 antique phonographs that were just sitting in the other room. I had no idea. This is heaven. And then the alarm goes off and you wake up and you can't, and you're thinking, how can I take things from the dream world? How can I remove them and bring them back into the real world? And what is it that I really want? Is it really an old antique phonograph that I want to bring from my dreams into reality? What do I want reality to consist of? If I could populate it myself, if I could make people, if I had to make you, I would have done a terrible job. First of all, you would look like very terrifying papier-mâché puppets. Because that's about the best I could do. Flesh is very, very hard. You can get kits. There's things you can get from Japan where you'd add a little water and you mix it up and then you can put it in a mold and it looks like a finger, but it's not. It's not. A real human finger takes a lot to develop. So you would all just be like puppets or maybe like stuffed animals and sitting around. And I would have to put words in every one of your mouths, which I also don't think I could do very well. Now, I make puppets talk, but they say inane, silly things. And they don't say anything that I didn't anticipate them saying. But you, you people are always a surprise to me. Others are always a surprise. You can solve problems with me because you're going to say something that I didn't think of. That's what we're for. I'm to be not you, and you're to be not me, and there's no wrong way to be. I know this from evolution. How do you know this from evolution? I know this from, well, I try not to study too much because I believe that messes up your brain because it gives you too many options. You know, so I just like to half kind of learn things. And so I was studying Francis Galton, who gave us some wonderful developments in the world in science and everything, came up with some fantastic things. But he also came up with the idea of eugenics, which is not such a great thing, right? We don't want to make perfect people, even though it sounds like a good idea, right? Like, oh, only people, very smart people should breed. Oh, that would be great. Okay, you pick them. It doesn't work very well. But Francis Galton also wrote a book that I was very fascinated with, and it's called, I believe it's called The Art of Travel or something like that. And what he wanted to do is write a book about the best ways to do everything when you're traveling, the best way to do it. And so it was one of the first books that actually did like product research, found it, what's the best rope? So if you're in Africa and you need to like rope an elephant or something, what's the best rope? So he bought all these ropes at a store and tested when this is the best rope. What is the best kind of wood to make a raft when you're alone in the wilderness? And he figured out the best kind of wood. And so he rated everything. He even figured out the best way to cut a cake. Because you know, if you cut a cake, you take one little piece out of it, the cake could get stale. So he wrote a letter to a scientific magazine, and he said, this is the way you cut a cake. So you have a round cake like that, and you cut two lines in it, and you take out the central piece. And then you jam the other two halves together, and you wrap them with a rubber band, because that was the solution to everything. Wrap it up with a rubber band. Right? And then you cut that. This way, again, take that out, shove it together, so you've always got something that looks like a little cake football. And you're gutting it, taking the middle out, right? That's the best way to carve. Well, that's an awful way to carve a cake. That looks stupid, right? Everybody gets a different shaped piece. That is not the best way to carve a cake. It's the best way to carve a cake if you're really super concerned about it going stale. But let's say everybody's going to eat it at once. Then it's absolutely ridiculous. The reason that the man who came up with that cake cutting technique also came up with the notion of eugenics is because it is a fundamental error to see the world in terms of good, better, or best. They're only good, better, or best based on a situation. All right? So it's not necessarily good, better, or best all the time. You're either good for that situation or not. And that's how evolution works, too. You know, your hairy babies may survive the winter, and your naked babies may not, but it might not be winter. So whether the hairy babies are best or not depends. Everything depends. So who you are, if you feel sometimes not good enough, or you feel like, I don't think I have a role in this world, or who am I? What am I supposed to be doing? You know, I feel maybe like a bit of a failure sometimes. I've got great news for you. there's no worry. You need not worry about that. You being whatever you are, doing whatever you are, thinking whatever you are is absolutely sufficient for you as a biological entity. They say, but what if I'm something more than that? I can't help you. I don't know. I don't know. Then you're allowed, you may feel insignificant or something if you're secretly some sort of God. I really don't know what your mission is. But if you're just a creature, if you're just a creature like me, then you're good enough just sitting there like that. You're good enough just being here. Because if suddenly there is a volcano, and we know now that there could be in this section of Kentucky. We are in a section, the things that have happened here. We could be fossilized just like those people in Pompeii are, just like our brothers, our coral brothers and sisters. By the river's edge that are now all petrified. Have you seen them? Have you gone on? They've got, see, hundreds of millions of years ago, right where we are was a shallow sea, a sea that spread for miles and miles, just like the Mediterranean. And it was just like this. It was very shallow. And there was corals in it and lots of things in it. They don't have these anymore. Which is foolish. I think it'd be very popular. I think a sea that only came up to your knee would be extremely popular with people. Lots of people drown and everything. Imagine going to the beach and go, this is perfect. I'm gonna walk out like 8-10 miles and get some little bivalve or something and come back. And that would be lovely. Could happen again, right? But if it happened again, those of us with knees that are right here would be fine. And those of us with knees like lower, they might get wet and not be cope as well. Things change. The environment changes. The world changes. And so we don't have to change. We've been made pure change. We are. That's all we are. We're different because you have to be different. You're different because you've got to be that little thing in your Swiss Army knife that's inexplicable. There's always something that I don't know whether that's to open a kind of can I don't own or whether it's to take out blackheads. I found some things when my grandfather died in his dresser, and I don't know what they were. And then my grandmother said, oh, that's for blackheads. And I was like, what is that? What do you do with it? It was the most horrible looking thing, and I guess you just punch it into your skin or something. Oh, no. I found that and caponizing tools. So I don't know what my grandfather was going around popping zits and cutting the testicles off of roosters. I don't know if it was the same, whether he was doing it at the same time. He liked little mechanical things and everything. And that made, when I did lose my grandfather, it made me think about these things because I thought, well, who is he? You know, what did he do? You don't know him. He didn't really accomplish anything that great. And the things that I remember about him when he died are his caponizing tools and that he must have had bad skin or something. And that's all I remember. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't a valuable person. We all are valuable people. I can't believe we're all standing here in it. I'm the only one standing, actually, in the basement. It's a very odd feeling. I feel like I've been introducing someone too long. I'm sorry it's taken me this long to introduce this young man who were given the scholarship to this year. I'd like to tell you something about our organization. We have been insuring houses and farms in this area for 30 years. I myself attended this very high school right here. And the young man who's getting the prize, his family goes to the same church as mine. And so we're all very close. And he is my nephew. And I just want to say some about his father, who we were very concerned about, and he's a young man now we're very proud of. People can overcome their problems, especially if they get scholarships like this that we're awarding to this young man. We have helped over 500 schools this year with our tractor-to-trailer program. Oh, bless everybody. Everybody who gets a microphone has something to say, don't they? A lot of people do. Some pretend they don't. But really, it's in all of our hearts to want to speak to other people, want to address them, want to say something, especially to sort of confess what's in our own hearts a lot of times. We desire that from other people. That's what I like to do. I like to get up and I like to say to people, you know, this is something that makes me afraid, or this is something that gives me concern. You know, do you have this too? Or maybe I've gone through this and I've gotten over this. You know, maybe that's helpful to you. I have dreams where I do that. I have dreams where I'm standing on a stage and I'm tearfully pleading with people not to hate me, which is show business in like a nutshell right there. That's what it is. Every time you see somebody at a microphone, you should think, oh, bless their heart, because they have some need in them to be in front of everyone, when really I should be sitting down there and we should all just be talking. There was a beautiful cacophony before we started. There was a bunch of individual conversations. And that's a lovely thing. That's when human voices sound their best. When they sound their worst is we were having a meeting. Oh, that's just horrible. And you never make eye contact, because you will see people this is what's horrible about performing, by the way. If you look at people's eyes, it absolutely are incapable of hiding their emotions, you know? And the worst is boredom, when they can't hide that, you know? And you look out, and even in regular conversation, you talk to somebody. I was just saying something to my mother the other day, and I got to the end of it. Well, it was clearly a joke, and my mom went, she was not listening to a word I said, not a word. I don't know what she was thinking. She was making all the motions. She was going like that, but she was somewhere completely some other place. I've spoken to crowds like this, a little bit bigger, and you're having a great time and you're saying some funny things, and you look down and there's always somebody looking like that at you, and then you're gone. That's because then that person becomes the most important person in the world. Is the person that you think hates you is now like, well, that you are now my God. Person who doesn't care for me, I must direct everything to you. Why do you think you don't like me? Do I remind you of somebody? Because somebody said that, you know, you have my stepdad's eyes. There's nothing I can do about that. You know, I'm sorry about that. We could be related. I don't know. But just, is it something, is it a way I could speak? If I could speak differently, would you like to make any suggestions about something I could do differently? I'm very concerned that you did. And then you're not even looking at the people that are with you. It's a weird feeling. We really want to be loved by the people that judge us and care for us the least. That's why we're wearing what we're wearing. I do that when I leave the house. Okay. Well, people that are judgmental like this shirt. Because I'm worried. I know there's a lot of people that are very obsessed with body type and everything like that. Is my gut sticking out a little bit for those people? I don't want them to hate me. And the people that don't care about those things, I don't even think of them when I get dressed, right? I just think about the people that are going to look at me and think I'm an idiot. There was a lady, I was one of those videos on Facebook, and it was this eccentric older lady in New York City, one of those people that dressed in very, you know, colorful ways and was an artist and everything. And they were interviewing, and she said to her, well, you know, I like to dress colorfully, but I don't want to go too far. I don't want people to think I'm a clown. I was thinking, oh, even she's self-conscious. There's no hope. Because if this lady who can go out there with the big loop earrings and if she's thinking, I hope they don't think I'm a clown, it's over for those of us who are constantly like, are these frames right? We have no hope. You know, I want to be able to just be myself relentlessly. I want to be able to make mistakes with absolute impunity, especially if I'm making mistakes that have absolutely no effect on the world or our survival or something like that. I don't want to let you fall off a bridge or anything. But anything short of that, like boring you, man, that's part of life. I've had some exquisite conversations where I'm bored, unbelievably bored. They're almost like... They're beautiful in a way. They're almost like listening to a really complicated musical piece. You know, it's like, I'm going to have to concentrate a little harder because I think my bar for being entertained is too high. You know, what is it to be bored anyway? You know, sometimes I have had moments where I'm sitting somewhere and I don't have a phone or there's nothing to do, seemingly. You know, a lot of times I'm feeling self-conscious. But then, you know, I'm far from bored because then suddenly everything becomes very noticeable and I'm looking around and no longer do I feel that way. I feel like a part of things then. I can look and observe, but I'm not bored. Oh, no, I'm not hardly bored anymore. And am I still self-conscious? Oh, yes, very much so. And that's because we want to be loved and we want to be accepted and we want to be thought to be good, don't we? Good at what we do, a good person, right? And no one wants to be thought of as a bad person. What would it take for you to think of me as a bad person? Probably not much. Probably something I would do in that situation where we're all locked in the room and we can't leave, right? Because that's what happens in the movies. Oh, that's the guy who he stole the drugs. The exterminating angel kid who steals all the morphine or something. Can I just tell you about that movie from beginning to end? No, that's okay. That's all right. But like, if a sheep wanders in, let's eat it. I don't even eat sheep, but I think that would be fun. You don't have any animals wandering around? That's not going to happen? No, except for the dog. Oh, the beautiful dog. There is a dog. I'm just really talking to the dog. Y'all are welcome to listen. But oh, you and me, am I right? We're alone here, just you and me. People love, oh, that's, I would be one of those people if I could choose my only companion. It would be some silly dog. And one that misbehaved, too. Not one that listened to me. I don't want a dog that listens to me. That's lame. Who wants that? No, I want a dog that's got some backbones. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'll get together with you when it suits me. Thank you. Because I don't want you to feel obligated. I don't use the word master. I can't stand it. I'm not your master. We're roommates. It's just that you're incredibly irresponsible. And you pee on the kitchen floor and everything. And I actually pay for everything and get the food. But that's very much like a lot of you thinking, I've had that roommate. I still have that roommate. That roommate won't leave. Oh, I know. But fortunately, that roommate doesn't have that short little doggy lifespan, which is just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be. They can be great for such a concentrated period of time. Oh, we love dogs. Yes, we do. You know who's listening to us? Your woo is actually going out probably across a large part of North Jersey. And I don't know if you know that. You're thinking, I'm just sitting here in Louisville, and I giggle. You can hear me giggling now in North Jersey. It'd be some taxi driver going, oh, guy's giggling. Yeah. That's you. Isn't that amazing? And you'll be affecting people's lives that you've never even met. And here you are just sitting in the comfort of a friend's basement. Oh, this is a wonderful thing. This is very cozy. I like it a lot. I like for the listeners, let me just describe... It's a basement, but it's the ceiling is a lot. Have you ever seen Being John Malkovich? I don't know that it's a full room almost. It's maybe a half floor. It makes me feel very, very tall. My head is almost hitting the ceiling. But it's and there's some pipes that would take me out completely. I would leave a chunk of my very dried scalp flesh on it, sticking there, and that would be very horrifying. But there's plenty of room down here, and I hope plenty of air. Are you feeling like you have enough air? Is everybody, we haven't run out? We've sealed it up pretty good to do a little bit of experiment. In a few minutes, I'm going to be the first one out because I'm talking. So I'm going to hyperventilate and I'll be gone. And then the rest of it is one of those social experiments. Now, some of you have been given a piece of paper that says prisoner. Others have a piece of paper that says other prisoner. All the guards have been killed. So this is going to be a brutal, brutal psychological experiment. I took part in those. They still make you do that in college sometimes for you take psychology 101 or something. And they go, you got to do a certain amount of psychological experiments. You go, well, that's hard. Really? That sounds not right, right? You realize I'm like literally still a teenager. Yes. But we need you to show up and we're going to mess with you really badly. So you might show up to an office and we go, oh, your mom's dead or something. And then we'll write down what you say. I went to kind of a bad one. I went to one where it was a reward and punishment thing. And we were answering questions. I know what we were doing. We were playing darts with our opposite hand. So if you were right-handed, they would make you throw darts with your left hand. Okay? And then if they would tell you you were either doing bad or good versus this other person in this other room. whether you were or not. And they said, every time that you beat that other person, we're going to punish them. Like, I don't know, electric shock or something. Do something horrifying to them to see if it made you do better if you thought the other person was being punished or was losing. So they told both of us we were winning and that the other person was, and that's supposed to motivate you, right? And I think about this all the time. You know, am I winning if somebody else is losing? Is that how we gauge what winning is? Is that how I know whether I'm doing well, whether you're suffering? Do you have to suffer for me to know that I'm well? I don't know. I think no. I think we could all not suffer. That's just me, though. So, but I came out of this experiment, and I felt very manipulated. I felt very played by that. And I knew that I asked the other person who I'd gone there with, and then he said, yeah, I thought I was winning, too, and that you were being punished. And that made me angry. I was like, well, no, there's some punishing due. And we tried to figure out who had actually won. So how many bullseyes did you get? Because then we're going to punish one of us. No. That's a bad thing to do. You are not winning if somebody else is losing. That's not how it works. We're all going to lose eventually. Everyone in here will perish. Maybe by... Oh, gosh. I've said this before, and then somebody died like months later. I was talking to a group, and I said, you know, some of us will not be here next time. And man, my friend who was sitting like right there died like months later. And I was like, wow, I didn't believe that. I was just saying that. I thought that's just like things that I say, things that Hardy says. You know, remember, we all memento mori. You know, so live your life. And I didn't think it was actually true. And then the person disappears and they're not there. It's really, really real. You know, this is as impermanent and fleeting and crazy as you think it is. So it's very important and very intense when we actually are together, you know, and we take it for granted so much, even when we're with strangers, even if we're sitting in a room in a restaurant, you're eating with these people, even though you'd never met them before. I'm telling you, your lives could be thrown together, in a scary way, in a Pompeii basement way, in a runaway bus way. All of a sudden, you will remember one another because you're about to have a shared experience. These are shared experiences too. This is no bus accident. Well, it is. Metaphorically, it is. It is literally not. It is literally not a volcanic eruption in Pompeii. But we are, all of us, frozen in time here. This position you're in, you'll be in my brain for all of eternity. Just sitting like that, like a George Segal sculpture, except with more detail that somebody has painted in a gaudy and realistic manner. Turning it into a totally different kind of sculpture. Now you're like a Dwayne Hansen sculpture. Is that real? Or is that wax? Is that fiberglass? It's fiberglass because that's what killed him. Is that awful? But I did, right? Poor Dwayne. He was making those beautiful, realistic fiberglass sculptures. And fiberglass is like the worst thing in the world to work with. So he also demonstrated something I mentioned earlier. When you're making human beings from scratch, it is very difficult and very dangerous. And they can look very real, but they're going to kill you in the end. You got to let people be themselves. You have to let people be people, I think. And it's nice to make them up, but it's also nice to have the real ones that are unpredictable, that aren't going to do the same things twice, ever. And that's why we have other people. And yes, they're frustrating, and they're maddening, and yes, some of them you would like to murder. And I guess that's what I'm getting at. I would like to ask your help. Murdering. Believe me, they deserve it. You don't have to do this for me. This would just be something we can talk about a little later. And I would be more than happy to do it for you too. There's been movies like that, right? I'll kill your enemy if you kill mine. And we can work together like that. It would be ironic, and you could actually be the enemy that I want to kill. And then that's the way to do it, though, and do yours first so that they don't have to get you back. And now you can't. You're dead. So now I don't owe you anything. I can't believe that I'm not sitting at my desk and recording this show, that I'm in front of other people. It's very disconcerting to me. I don't ever perform live. I don't do it because I have this disorder where I look into other people's eyes and I see their humanity. And it's and it's just so terrifying and preoccupying. And you know what I mean? You can't disregard it. It's just, it's like, oh, there's another person. They have all their experiences there and who they are. And they have interesting faces and they look sort of familiar, but not. And it's easy to read them. It's very easy to read people. I know some of you are trying out of politeness to disguise your emotions. Mm-hmm. But it's not that hard, especially when you're looking up. You don't really... I've done this at performances where I think I'm resting my eyes. And I'm thinking, I think the performer saw me going like that. And I'm not quite at the age where that's cool, right? And you just, I'm jerky. I think at about 80, you're allowed to just do that, but... you know, it's a little young now, but I'm used to closing my eyes and speaking. And I imagine that you're there. I imagine that you're you and you're listening, right? But I don't have to be confronted with the actual reality of it, which is very difficult. And that's why a lot of us also have social anxiety. I don't know if you do. You're here, which is amazing. I'm here, but if you notice, I'm not talking to you directly. I'm just speaking at you, which is one of the first signs that somebody is really not that functionally altogether, right? I can show up at a place, but having a conversation with you will be absolutely excruciating. And not, and it's because I'm afraid that I'm all wrong. Everything I do is wrong, or I'm going to say something stupid, and I desperately want to be liked. And I always think, well, if I keep that to a minimum, if I don't interact, if I just smile, they'll remember the smile. Somebody was doing some work on a bathroom recently. And every day I'd see him, he'd come work on the bathroom. I'd say, "You know, good." I'd smile, I'd be friendly. That's about it. At the end of the job, he goes, "Man, I wish all my customers like you. He's just the greatest customer." And I was like, all I did was not be a jerk. I don't understand what I did. I just smiled at you. I kept our interaction limited so that you would like me. You know, because if we had got to talking, I would have heard your opinions. And then who knows what would have happened after that. Once you've heard somebody's opinions, you're obligated to say something back, especially if it's awful. This has happened recently, too. And you go, no, people from other countries are not evil. And you need to speak up and everything. And that runs the risk of not being liked, too. So that's very difficult. And I'm just saying that I don't have that kind of courage. I applaud it. I applaud people who can stand up and say, do not murder this child unjustly. But I would rather that you like me. No. Now, see, you can't get out of some of the situations. And liking that person that's going to do an injustice is the same as trying to please somebody who doesn't like you, is judgmental anyway. Same as putting that shirt on. It's the same thing. So I'm trying to please somebody who's actually not, you know, doesn't believe the same, doesn't even have the same values that I do. And I'm going out of my way to be liked. Wow, I don't even know how to be a person. I have absolutely no clue. And I have this suspicion that I'm getting to the end of being a person. And I figured I'd have it down. You know, the way that people do when they've done some sort of skill for decades. Go, you're very good now at putting in tile. Yes, you're very expert at that. The rest of it, not so much. I literally don't know, and I don't know that I'll ever figure it out. Every time I get on the microphone and realize that I have a radio show, I think I should be saying something. But I don't feel like it every week, and I don't have anything to say every week. Sometimes I wake up and I think, well, I really am an idiot. Now I got to go out, and I have to pretend to say something to people. I have to pretend to say something that's worth hearing. And I know that this is impossible, and I know that actually after even no matter how good you are, There's a certain I've been to church. You ever been to church? Mm-hmm. I mean, most people that go to church every week, this is the only show where they go every week and they yawn and they can't wait to get out of there, but they keep going back. You know, that's what I want from an audience. Some sense of obligation that's so deep and psychologically twisted that even though they're uncomfortable, they're in pain, they're bored out of their minds. They're hanging on every word they possibly can. between trying to keep their eyes open. And I've done that and goes, phew, man, this is a great service this week. Because you know why you're there? You're not there to listen to somebody. You're actually just there to be in the physical presence of other people. Because you suspect, and you are correct, that as an individual, you're just a little bit incomplete. You can't possibly be here just, that can't be the intent to be alone in a basement. The intent must be to be with others. And it is, no matter who they are. And we have just the right size group right now that qualifies as a sort of minimal community, right? Where we're a little larger than a small family and a little smaller than a church or a neighborhood. It's just that one beautiful kind of unit where we can all remember each other's names. We could talk to each other, all have individual conversations, and come out of here kind of knowing each other a little better. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. And I love to see that. And if I know that most of you know each other, do you not? Are we just a group of friends here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'd say the person you don't know really is me very much. So it's bizarre that I'm the one doing the talking, right? It's very strange that I'm standing here recording this show in front of you. Because I'll tell you what, a lot of the people who listen to me listen absolutely alone. And one of the things that radio can do better than anything is to touch the lonely. People are by themselves, they've got nothing, and they're like me, a little scared to go out and interact with other people. But the radio gives you this wonderful excuse, this wonderful tiny hole to look through. Nobody needs to see you. You can just look through a little crack in the wall, a little hole in the ballpark fence. And you can watch, and nobody knows you're eavesdropping or listening, and that person on the radio is talking just to you. And you don't feel so lonely anymore. My uncle would leave the TV on all night long. Do you ever have an older relative like that? He would leave it on, he'd go to sleep with it on, and wake up and go to his factory job. And the TV was keeping him company every single night. Just an ad, just somebody go, you know. And I've had nights like that where I'm feeling kind of lonely. I sit on the couch, and the MyPillow guy, it's like, it might as well be Jesus. And with the size of that cross around his neck, he might be Jesus. But it's so comforting and beautiful and so bland and stupid and silly. But we all need a pillow, don't we? And his voice, he wants me to relax. He doesn't want me to have a stiff neck in the morning. I hear you, my brother. I know you're just saying these silly things to sell your pillows, but I feel you over here. I'm tired. I need a place to lay my head down. I need a pillow, a figurative one. I need it to be made of the acceptance of love of my fellow man. That's what I need to lay my pillow down on, my head down on, something soft. May I land in a soft place. I have no idea who I am. I'm so lonely in this world. Oh, television and radio, deliver me. Bring me to a place of comfort. Make my heart whole. Lift me up. Give me a reason to do my thing. Tell me who I am. Tell me who I'm supposed to be. Tell me the songs that I'm supposed to listen to. Tell me the stories that I'm supposed to remember. Tell me the news that is pertinent to my life. Tell me these things. Be with me. I'm going to lay here. I want to hear your voice. Just keep talking. I don't care if you're talking to me. Just tell a story. Just read from a book. When we lay there in fear, some of us dying, that's what we want. Just somebody read to me. I want to hear the voice of another person. I want to hear the voice of life. I want to hear human beings doing their thing. I want to know that things are going on without me, in spite of me, around me, that I am part of a thing, that it's not all about me, that it's not all depending on me, that I am here and beautiful in this space, and I am listening, I am floating through it like a leaf, like a sentient leaf, taking it all in, noticing, but with no burden. It's not the leaf's nature. He's just there floating through it. It's not your world. You don't have to do anything. You just have to be. And that should be comforting to you. It's so important that you're here tonight. You think, well, I don't know if it's important I'm here tonight. It's very important that you're here tonight. Everything that you do is very important and critical. You don't know. It might not be critical for you. It might be critical for something else, for someone else. You might be here helping me. you might be here giving me a huge gift. And you are. I don't want you to think you are, because then you'll think I owe you something. But you are, because anytime you listen to somebody, you're giving them a tremendous gift, whether you listen to their music, whether you listen to their words, whether you listen to their stories. I'm sure you've done this on a trip. You've just sat down to somebody that you didn't really know, maybe some older person, and you start talking to them, and they start telling you a story of their life, and it's a remarkable story, and you think, who is this person that for a minute I was just going to pass by like they were a trash can, like they were just some piece of garbage on the ground or something, not give them a second thought, but here they are with this huge, this rich life, this beautiful story, and they're sharing it with me, and now our lives have crossed. And now they're mixed up just a little bit. And that story will always be in me. And the telling of the story to me will always be in that person. And we'll have that. And we may never see one another again. But this is the wonderful magic thing about being alive. It is to me. It's how our paths cross like this. How we come in and out of one another's lives. How we find ourselves in situations like we just going to hear about some garum sauce in the basement of Pompeii in 79 AD on August 24th. And that's, we thought that would be it. And that we would leave the basement and go, you know, I never really liked fish sauce. It's a little stinky for me. And then we'd go off to the big, there's a big orgy at the pool. I'll probably catch that before breakfast. I don't know, though. And then, but you didn't think that you were going to end up frozen in place in fear, covered with hot ash. And you won't be able to remember that. The last thing you remember will just be perhaps fear or uncertainty. You know, there's a story. This was actually me. I have a time machine, so I do a little bit of traveling. And I was going to see King Croesus, who my grandfather would mention incessantly. He's as rich as Croesus. Turns out that Croesus is actually as rich as Croesus and was a very wealthy man. And I'm getting in an argument about him, about what's a good life. And I say, you can't say you had a good life because your life's not over. And Croesus says, well, wait, I'm the richest person in the world. My life has been great. And I said, yeah, but something truly horrible could happen at the end and mess it all up. And of course it did. And so does that make his life great or messed up? What about it was his life? All the years of wealth, that last tragedy at the end, what constitutes your life? Is it today? Is it yesterday? Is it what's going to happen in the future? Or is it just every little single moment put together? If it's every moment, then this moment is the most valuable moment in the world right now, right this second, where you are. In this strange place, in this basement, watching some strange guy talk on a microphone, not saying anything. It isn't a show. It isn't a comedy show. He's not saying poetry. He seems to be just talking. That's so strange. I don't even know why I'm here. Did I make the right choice in coming? Will I remember anything about this situation? Maybe, and maybe not. But right now, it is the sum total of your life. It is a moment that has stretched into infinity and encompassing everything. Can you believe that? And if it ended right now, it would be the last moment of your life.
This is a heck of a place to interrupt. This is Hardy, by the way. Future Hardy. But I'm running out of time. So the show went long. I'll just explain what happened after that. So I said a bunch of things, tied it all together with some more smattering of laughter, and then there was some applause at the end. And I think a chant of, we love you, Hardy. That might be in my imagination. I'm going to put that in there a little later. I'm going to add it in. I was thinking of also adding some Foley of ice in a glass. I remember those old comedy records when I was growing up. People would go, man, somebody's having a cocktail. Also, I got to be able to say, what are you listening to? Well, believe it or not, it's Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York, source of miracles, and online, worldwide, at WFMU.org. And I couldn't say, I probably said that live. We'll see. I'll play the applause from the end of this show at the beginning of next week's show. I think that's how we'll do it. And then I'll just play the whole thing in a loop like that, where it'll end in the middle of one show and then pick up. Would you like that? No, don't do that. Oh, I'm going to do it anyway. It's like my joke about the V and the 5. I just think that's hilarious. Friends, I'm so blessed to be with you again this week and every week. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you again next week.